Every Wisconsin fan feels a bit more optimistic right now. The recruiting is better, the investment is higher, and the vision is clearer. But before we declare the Badgers are back, there are still tough questions that need answers. I'm Rajiv, he's Justin. Here we go.
Welcome to the Bucky Report, your destination for all things Wisconsin Badgers. Authentic takes.
Oh my God.
Game analysis.
Touchdown Badgers, ring one up.
And discussion from the fan perspective.
Woohoo!
Thanks for joining us and on Wisconsin.
Welcome into the Bucky Report. We are your hosts, Rajiv and Justin, back together on a Sunday afternoon this time to talk about all things Wisconsin Badgers. On today's show, we'll hit the latest Wisconsin recruiting wins with James Roberson and Jack Tabbert, talk Jack Thielen's commitment to Wisconsin basketball, and discuss the Brendan Sorsby controversy. But the main event today, 10 tough questions facing Wisconsin football. These aren't the obvious questions everyone is asking. These are the under-the-radar questions that could determine whether Luke Fickell has truly turned this program around. You can find our show on YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. If you like what we're doing, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Over 50% of you are not subscribed to watch the show. Glad you watch it. Hit that subscribe button if you like what we're doing so that you can know when we make new content. A lot of good stuff coming up. This is sort of the official launch of the football preview season, because as you're watching on YouTube, the countdown's at the top, 84 days left until the Badgers kick off. That clock's going to stay up there for the remainder of the summer. We have all kinds of stuff coming up. We've obviously just sort of got out of the recruiting stuff. We're going to keep talking about that, and then we're going to really break down the schedule, do our Know Your Foe series. So much content coming up over the summer. Justin, how you doing? Are you watching the World Cup at all? Because obviously I am.
I missed it, and then I ended up coming home. I was going to, like, what should I check out? Should I check out the World Cup, or should I check out Jacob Mizorowski throwing a one-hitter complete game with 15 strikeouts where he faced the minimum? I'm like, I have to watch the pitching.
I know that many of you that listen to this are Brewers fans, which is, I'm sorry. But also, like, every single time Mizorowski's on the mound, Justin blows up my phone with every time he has a strikeout. Listen, I get it, Brewers fans. And I had another buddy of mine who I went to college with who literally texts and says, glad to see my Brewers are pulling away from your Cubs. I'm like, F off, buddy. Like, what?
I know we've had good pitchers over the last, like, 10 years. We've never had somebody that I realized that one of those guys won a Cy Young. There has never been a Brewer pitcher in my lifetime that I looked at and, like, this guy's an auto win. And there have been pitchers in the past. Like, I bring up Maddux all the time. I bring up Randy Johnson. Like, those are guys that I looked at when they took the mound. It's like, you're probably losing this game. Like, they're going to lose maybe four games this entire season when those guys are pitching. He's the first guy I've looked at where I'm like, hitters are just, they can't do anything. Like, you have to basically start swinging when the guy starts his motion almost, because he throws so damn hard.
I mean, I get it. I understand. He is really good. I won't watch it because I don't need to, because I get the play-by-play from Justin via text message. But I am watching the World Cup. And obviously you guys know I'm into soccer. If you don't watch club soccer, I get it. Watch the World Cup. It's pretty awesome. It's what got me into watching.
I did see the highlights, by the way.
Yeah, it's what got me into, like, once I really started getting into international soccer, that's when I sort of discovered club. And of course the story goes on from there. But I'm hoping England wins. Obviously the US is my top choice, but I don't think that's gonna happen. We looked really, really good though. That's a really good US team. Maybe, but England is the team I'm pulling for to actually win. Spain, France, Portugal, those are some of the favorites, Argentina. But nonetheless, I hope you guys watch soccer. It's fun. The World Cup is great.
Before we have jump some past yeah, that, yeah. Do you think quarterfinals are in play?
Yes. I think round of 16 is definitely in play for the US. It's all going to depend on, like, where they finish in the group. If they win their group, they'll have a favorable matchup in the round of 32, because 32 teams make it to the knockout round, which they've never had before. But yeah, I think they can win one. Round of 16, probably where it stops. Maybe their ceiling. Quarterfinal, absolutely their ceiling. And that would take a huge, huge win. Because listen, it's the European teams plus Argentina. That's basically the best teams in the world right now. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult for the US to get past that. Nonetheless, we got a lot of fun stuff. We're doing 10 under the radar questions, which we're going to get into. But first, I wanted to ping Justin on the Brendan Sorsby situation. I did a show on it earlier this week. I think it's the most ridiculous story in sports. I hope people agree with me. I think the more people that speak up on it, the more schools, the more conferences that say something. You cannot have a player play college football who bet on the sport. There has to be ramifications. There have to be rules. There have to be consequences. Even Texas Tech's athletic department came out with a video this week. And the first thing that the president said was, well, he did break the rules. There should be some consequences, but whatever. But there's no consequences. Yeah. He's getting suspended 2 games. That's BS. Justin, what is your take on all this?
No, the thing that made me the most upset about watching that video is that they said he's taking accountability. And I'm like, where the hell is he taking accountability? The mere fact that he put out or requested an injunction tells you that he's not taking accountability. And listen, this is even just for the, like, him being like denied or like having this where he's denied eligibility. He's broken laws that he should be getting punished for. Underage gambling, I'm assuming gambling across state lines, having like using somebody else's identity to gamble. Like, there's multiple things here where it's just like, all right, if we're not going to hold him accountable for the eligibility, then just hammer him with the maximum penalties associated with the actual crimes he committed then. And then just be like, all right, you don't want to face ineligibility? Let's just put you in jail for like 2 months or whatever.
I don't know that he actually did break any laws.
He did.
But he did. I don't know. Yes. I don't know that he did or not, but
he was underage gambling for sure. He gambled like where he sent stuff across state lines to have somebody else place bets for him. Mm. And then he also used other people's identities to bet. Those are legitimate things that he did through the course of this that were part of the problem. So it's like, just throw the book at him then. But unfortunately, this is where I get pissed off. And I brought it up on a thing. Like, our justice system right now is only the only people that are held accountable are the poor. Like, if you don't have somebody that can go to bat for you and get you like out of it, you're going to actually face the normal like repercussions of what you're supposed to have. When you have a massive university or whoever that's going to take your back and do everything they can to kind of come up with these stupid technicalities that make people not be held accountable for the bullshit that they get put into. Like, this is what happens. We have people that get out of things that they have no business getting out of simply because somebody wants them to be available. And it's crap. And it pisses me off so much to see somebody, because I'm an idealist. Like, if you did it wrong, like, then accept it. But so this is the whole purpose of this is to make it so that people don't do this stuff. And you're just saying, well, he didn't mean to or whatever. It's like the kid gambled 90 grand worth of, you know, stuff during this and multiple bets that were against his own team. So,
yeah. I don't know the details of against his own team. I don't think that happened, but I don't know.
He bet the under for yardage, which technically is still betting against your team when you're saying they're not going to be productive.
Ultimately, you can't bet on the sport you play. You just can't do it. Imagine this year if Sorsby's playing and the spread is they're favored by 7, they're up by 4. And he sails a ball on fourth down where they were in field goal range or something like that, or on third down. And every single play this guy takes, people are going to be claiming point shaving. Like, it's not going to go away. It's just going to be a thing all season. Tyler Schreiber says, in my opinion, gambling at the level we're seeing has ruined sports, and it will get worse because we're raising a generation of kids growing up on this stuff. Expect more Sorsbys in the future. The thing I'll say to this is, especially if he gets off scot-free from this, you can definitely expect more of this in the future, because if there's an actual ramification, he can't play the sport anymore because he did it, that might actually hinder some people. Be like, listen, I'm not going to take a risk because I could go play in the NFL. I'm not going to take a chance on this. But if he gets off scot-free, then why wouldn't you take a chance on it?
That was what was the issue with previous generations and not doing it. Like, we've had people within the last 5 years who have lost their eligibility and hadn't even bet on college football. Like, they bet on other things and they got caught that they were betting, and that ended up costing them their eligibility. The other part of this that really kind of pisses me off too is Texas Tech's athletic department effectively kind of making a massive slap into the face to addiction, which is, we're going to go ahead and, you know, put our arms around this kid and do everything we can to help him out with the football team. And it's like, if you really cared about this kid's well-being and you wanted him to become a better person and everything else, you would be flat out telling him, listen, this is clearly a catalyst for you in terms of causing your addiction. we're going to keep you away from football because it's not healthy for you to be around it. Because there's things here that are probably triggers, like, hey, my teammate is injured, or, you know, whatever. Hearing some of the things that you hear within that atmosphere that kind of give you things that are going to cause you to want to do those things. And that's exactly why they say do not put yourself in the position to be in a situation that potentially is going to cause problems for you. You need to learn how to you know, keep yourself away from opportunities where things are going to be bad, which is why you don't have an alcoholic be a bartender, or you don't have, you know, somebody who's a drug addict work in a pharmacy like I brought up on there. It's like these are situations that you absolutely would have somebody telling you this is not a healthy place for you to be. The odds of you not having a relapse are extremely low when you're consistently putting yourself in that environment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a crazy situation. We'll see what happens. Gosh, I don't even know how this is going to play out. All right. Before we get to our 10 tough questions facing the football program, a couple quick things. Recruiting. So we got two more recruits taking our class in 2027 up to 14th in the nation. James Roberson, safety out of Allen, Texas, 6 foot, 195 pounds, composite 3-star, and Jack Tabbert, another in-state recruit, composite 3-star interior offensive lineman. He's a guard, most likely 6'5", 275 pounds. Justin, your thoughts on Roberson and Tabbert? What do you like about these guys?
Well, we talked about Roberson before. I like him. He's a really versatile safety. He's an athletic kid that can really move around and can play. I think he can play deep. I think he really comes downhill well. He tackles really well. He's a good athlete. Not a huge kid, but I think he does everything well. Like, he's really versatile, and he's a kid that's very instinctual when you watch his film. And I really like the pickup because I think he's a guy who, you have some guys who maybe are a little bit more athletically, have the bigger build and are a little bit more, you know, have a longer frame. I think that he's a kid that you look at and you're like, at minimum, we know he's going to be a very, very good football player.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
He's very projectable compared to some of the other guys where it's like, we don't necessarily know if these other guys are going to hit their ceiling. I'd be very surprised if he's not a very good safety down the road.
Yeah, high floor is how you describe this guy, I think. It's like, it's basically he's very technically sound in the game. His football mentality is there, his football brain. Like, he understands the game. He plays with good leverage. He understands how to read offenses. Like, he's just playing the position better than a lot of people in high school. The difference is he doesn't have the physical frame and the physical tools that some of these other guys have, but that's the definition of those other guys that have those physical tools are more high ceiling. James Roberson is high floor, which is exactly what you need in our secondary, which, by the way, has plenty of high ceiling guys. Yeah. And this class has high ceiling guys. So I'm glad that you got a guy that's like just a good old football player who can do the job. Jack Tabbert is the guard from Pewaukee, Wisconsin. Justin, he's our newest commit. Thoughts on Jack Tabbert?
You might as well just call him a center. That's what he's being brought in as. He is listed as a guard, but they were very, very clear that they wanted to get somebody who was a center out of this class. And I think Tabbert, he was at the camp and was offered there. I think that they felt that he was somebody that translated well at that position. He's actually a really good player. Like, I was shocked that we hadn't heard much about him up into this. North Dakota State is where he was committed to, which clearly, I mean, they've always turned out really good offensive line prospects out of that school, and they do a great job of recruiting the Midwest. I think it's a really nice pickup for Wisconsin. There are plenty of other schools that probably had him on their list of guys of, like, if not an A plan B guy, but I think there's a lot of upside there. He moves really well. He's got a big frame. You could honestly say he's probably even maybe a little bit bigger than you'd like at center, because he's 6'5", 6'4 and a half. He's a guy who's probably going to carry 300, 310 pretty well. Mm-hmm. But he moves really well. I actually think that he's a guy that in a pinch, if you had to play him out at tackle, he probably has the athleticism to do it. But I like him really well in the interior of the line. I think he moves well, and you have a guy at center that you feel like could probably do some pulling and move well enough to come out and actually make some plays on the edge. It gives him some versatility in terms of some of the things that you want to do on offense.
I think the biggest story here is that it's another Wisconsin guy, right? It's like we're just continuing to lock down the state. And if you're a Wisconsin football player with talent to play college football, you need to come to Wisconsin. And I think that's exactly what's happening here. Last thing, Tyler Schuber brought it up earlier, real quick. What's your thoughts on the 7-footer we got in basketball yesterday. That would be Mr. Jack Thielen from Maple Grove High School in Minnesota. 7'1", 240 pounds. Justin, have you been able to watch this guy's film at all?
I watched a little bit. I checked out some of his younger film. Honestly, watching him on his sophomore film, which probably isn't fair for a guy who's 7 foot and has still clearly growing into his body, the first takeaway I had was this is a very raw Stephen Crowell, meaning like just the way he moved and stuff like that from his mannerisms on the court. I actually thought that he took a fairly big step going into his junior year from an athleticism standpoint. He just looked like he moved a little bit crisper and cleaner as an athlete compared to as a sophomore, which to me was a big deal. I actually thought I didn't necessarily love it when I looked at his sophomore film, but there's a lot of players that we could look at their sophomore film and be like, this guy's not a power four prospect yet, especially big men. I think that there's a spot where his senior year, he could end up looking like a pretty good player. He's very raw. I think that it's a work in progress yet. I think there's a lot, you know, that you hope there from an athleticism standpoint continues to develop, which big men are notorious for being a little bit behind the curve from that. So I think we look at it and hope that, you know, he gets here. He has a chance to be a very versatile, similar to Will Garlick, like a guy who can play on the interior, defend, gives you a little bit of post game. I don't know how much to expect from him on the perimeter.
Yeah, your thoughts same. On that? Yeah, no, I agree. I didn't really see much perimeter stuff at all in his film. And I don't know how he weighs. I don't think he's 240. I feel like he looks much smaller than that. He just looks like
he looks real thin. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is,
although I think Winter's in that range too, though, and he doesn't look very big.
Fair. I think at the end of the day, he with that body will develop and he will be able to, you know, come here, work in our strength and conditioning program and actually be able to build up some weight there. And his frame can carry it. He's 7'1". That's solid. Like he's an upside guy, right? This is a guy with a ceiling just because of he's 7'1". He's got some skills down underneath the basket. Like he's athletic enough at 7'1". And I think it's a development piece for sure. Okay. Let's get into our 10 tough questions. Again, sort of under the radar stuff that I sort of kind of thought of and about things that went as we look ahead to this football season, what are these questions that I think this program, this coaching staff really needs to answer? So we're going to start with number one, Justin. And if you are listening to this on a podcast or if you're on YouTube, put stuff in the comments. I'm really curious what you guys think about this, or also tell me what under the radar questions you're thinking of so we can touch on future shows. And if you're listening to this live, put your answers here in the chat so we can get that up on the screen. Number one, Justin, are we confident this coaching staff will not make a Heinzen type mistake again? So I'm referring to Davis Heinzen, left tackle last year, who in camp was given the left tackle job. And all through camp, came into the first game, got absolutely just hosed by the left tackle from Miami of Ohio, the defensive end from Miami of Ohio. And instantly an entire O-line shift was made. And we always ask the question, why was this not figured out during camp? How does this happen? Are we confident that the coaching staff's not going to make another Heinzen type mistake again, Justin?
Yeah, I think, well, we have to take into account that the offensive line coach is different. So if we're talking strictly offensive line, I just don't see
really any kind. I mean, because this is a fickle thing, too.
No, I was going to say, my perspective on this from a team-wide aspect is I don't know that we have a player that we've heard any of that type of negative news on where we're like, yeah, this guy just doesn't look like he fits the spot. Like even PJ Wilkins, I know there's people that question whether he could play tackle because he was a guard at Ole Miss. I don't think we heard anything that people were like, yeah, he looks out of place. He's really struggling. And especially Wisconsin has guys that are going to test you on that edge and make you look stupid from a speed standpoint if you don't have it. Like as fast as Reiger was last year, Cheeks and Clayton are faster than him and will absolutely test you on the edge as guys who are going to show burst. And if he was overmatched there and just not able to hold up, I would think that we would have heard a lot of things coming out saying like, yeah, he just looks rough. Now they got him a few times. We know that, but I think they're going to get a lot of guys a few times this season coming up that are going to be real tackles in the Big Ten. So I kind of feel like from offensive line, there's not much of that, but there's not really another spot that I look at and I'm like, yeah, this guy ain't it. He just doesn't fit. Like it feels like, and that's one of the things I think we feel like this year is different for me, at least, is there's not a spot that I see a hole there's certainly spots we can look at and say, I don't know how high the ceiling is there, but I don't think there's any glaring weaknesses where you look at it and be like, I don't know what we're doing here. Like, this spot is completely up in the air and we don't know what we have. And I think that's one of the reasons why I feel like this year, like, the floor is not necessarily, you know, we're going to be 4-8, 5-7, because it's like, I just don't see a spot where we're going to, teams are going to just absolutely crush us on. Even quarterback. It's like, we feel like there's multiple guys there that are capable of providing quality reps.
Yeah. And this doesn't necessarily just apply to the offensive line, but I think your point's taken. And I think Tyler answers this really well. He says, yes, I think the staff has shown they've recognized past mistakes and are open to adapting. In-state recruiting is a good example. Luke can't afford a mistake like Heinsohn twice. Yeah. I agree with this take. I think that ultimately we're not in a position that we can do that. I think that they recognized the issue last year and got more depth in a lot of these positions, right? Like, they clearly focused on the O-line. But even if you look across wide receiver, D-line, other positions, they clearly emphasized in the transfer portal that we're not going to let something like this happen again. That if we have an injury in camp and we have to move someone in, we're not going to have it derail our entire season. The offensive line was the worst it's probably been in our lifetime, or at least in our fandom lifetime, at Wisconsin, and that should not happen again. I am confident that team-wide, like you said, they've learned from their mistakes, and I think they're going to understand that you have to have more depth in these positions, and you have to have the right type of depth, not just a body, the right type of depth. So I think that has improved, and I agree. I do not think that mistake will happen again. Okay, number two, Justin, is Luke Fickell a good enough in-game strategist to win close games against good Big Ten teams? We haven't really seen a lot of you know, games where, like, wow, super, super well coached. We've talked about this a lot. He's more of the CEO style. How do you feel about in-game strategy? Because this was a Paul Chryst issue late in his career, and we are going to be in closer games this year because our team theoretically is better, and especially our defense.
I think this comes down to, you have to look at it as, do you believe in the coordinators? Because I know Fickell will probably give a somewhat guidance or light hand on some of what's done. But for the most part, do you believe the coordinators are capable of making, if we need a drive, do I feel like Grimes can get a touchdown drive if we're down 21-17 late in the game? I don't know on that one. I do feel confident about the defense. If we needed to get a stop on defense, given the talent level that I think that they have on defense this year and of what's available to them. And I do think that Tressel has taken a jump and proven that he kind of gets it now at this level. I feel pretty good about the defense. I don't know how I feel about the offense on this yet. I think we'll be improved on offense, but we haven't really been in a situation where we've need Grimes to do anything, where he had to put points on the board on a drive, because we haven't been capable at this point. So I realize he's only been offensive coordinator 1 year. We will find out quickly, probably early in this season, whether he's capable of doing some of those things.
I think that this, you know, I'm looking at this more perspective of, like, clock management, decisions on fourth downs. Like, I am skeptical. I think that recruiting has been Luke Fickell's strongest suit. There's no doubt in my mind that he, as a recruiter in the staff, and I'm not saying he's a bad in-game coach. I just think we haven't seen this enough, and we are going to be tested. We're going to be tested this year. We're going to be in close games, because we're playing more 50-50 games, right? We're not playing a schedule that's brutal and we're going to get killed. We're also not playing a schedule that's full of cupcakes. We're going to be in a lot of 50-50 battles, and the ability to make the right decisions, clock management adjustments, like in-game adjustments, and realizing, hey, look, this isn't working. I, as Luke Fickell, have to go to Jeff Grimes and Mike Tressel and say, we got to make some changes. We have to change our strategy. He needs to be involved. And that in-game strategy is a thing. And I think it's a fair question mark, because we haven't seen enough of it. And B, there have been times where we're like, ooh, I don't know, the coaching wasn't that great. How many times did we look back and say, not a game that's well coached? I think this is a fair question. And I think it's one that we're going to talk more about throughout the summer. And it is going to be something that we're going to look to, because I'm telling you, man, we are going to be in close games. And I don't want to come on Locked On Badgers after the game and say, we made the wrong decision. Luke Fickell made the wrong call. Like, we should have gone for it on fourth down or whatever. That stuff matters in close games. In a loaded conference like this, we can't afford stupid mistakes. This is a thing for sure. Okay, number three. So, strength and conditioning, injuries, Justin. Will the changes, strength and conditioning, improve Wisconsin's annual injury crisis? Brady Collins was recently interviewed and has talked about not really making it about a program type thing. It's really more of an individual program. Like, people, we need to look at these guys as more individuals and not just say, hey, everyone needs to, you know, do X amount. It's really more individual plans. It's more being ready. I think the quote was being ready for September 6th. Like, how can we make each player ready for September 6th versus how far, how much can we push these guys in the winter? Now, we haven't had a lot of soft tissue injuries. A lot of these things have been freak, but it is still a thing. We have lost our quarterback three straight years. We've lost other players. I mean, and the strength and conditioning and always comes into question when you have a lot of injuries. Do you feel like that's going to be better with some of the new things that Brady Collins is talking about?
Well, I mean, you think about it and it makes total sense. Like, I realized for a longest time, it was always like, well, this position group is going to have this lifting schedule. We're going to push these things and they might tailor it to what your needs are in terms of like, oh, this is where we've seen you at for your benchmarks. I do think you need to take a look at this from a kinesthesiology step and kind of look at it and be like, okay, based off of your body composition, what are your potential weaknesses on this? Now, this is one of the things that the Packers looked into with a wide receiver that they're perpetually having injury situations with, where they'd figure out things like, well, one hamstring is significantly stronger than the other, and that leads to soft tissue type things because there's an imbalance between the two. That to me should be something that they do testing on to figure out like, okay, what are the likelihoods of something like this? Because that's where a lot of the soft tissue injuries come from. It's a imbalance on something, or something is a weakness because there's not stability provided by the muscles surrounding, you know, ligaments and stuff like that, which end up leading to some of the issues that happen from a stability standpoint. So yeah, it's a big deal to kind of look at this and narrow it down individually to guys. And it's probably been going on at the NFL level for the last 5 years. Like, I think now you're looking at it from the perspective of from college. It really makes sense, especially if you're a staff that's struggled with consistent injuries. I don't know how much of that I would have put on the strength and conditioning staff per se previously, but you need to do everything you can to minimize those situations as much as you can if you know that you have a strategy that should help with it.
So I think that one of the things I'm happy about is they're addressing a problem. They're making changes to the strength and conditioning. Will Hanna says, I think a change in strength and conditioning processes was necessary. And according to what Brady Collins has said, it has happened and we've changed. The one thing I will say is we see changes every year. This team, this coaching staff seems to change their philosophy a little bit. Like, it was, okay, we're not going to hit too much in camp. Okay, we are going to hit in camp. Okay, we're going to change this. We're going to do this. Like, every year things change. And sometimes that makes me wonder, like, do they have a good enough plan and are they strong enough to actually create these programs, or is it just chasing their tail and constantly reacting to things? Now, I will say, like, the plan is to make it more NFL. Like, you brought up the Packers thing. I think that's fair. And I think they're moving in the right direction. But year four, you got to be able to have a thing that works and a plan that these guys are going to put into place. And the fact that they're still changing things and tweaking things is okay, but kind of changes. I'm always concerned about SNC, honestly. I like Brady Collins. I think he's really going to be, obviously, from the energy perspective, and the guys seem to like him. But we do need to make sure that we're prepared for this conference and the physical requirements that it has to play in this league. But again, this is kind of a big question for me. I think I'm not sure how this goes. I would hope that this strength and conditioning group is just ready to, you know, like, they put in their plans and they can move forward and we can have real strides. But I do appreciate the tweaks.
What I will say with regards to this is I think that a certain amount, when your roster is not where you want it to be, I think that a certain amount of this happens because as a coaching staff, you're like, we need to chase any type of, you know, advantage we can find. And so you're constantly looking for ways because they have to be throwing their arms up a little bit with how things have gone over the last 3 years and being like, well, what the hell can we do to get things going in the right direction on this? Because it seems like every time you expect something to be at least okay, it ends up being worse than what you expected it to be. So it's like, well, what can we do? What's going wrong here? Because we've had success with this in the past, and now we're not. So how can I fix this? I know that it feels lame to say it, but this coaching staff also deserves some level of luck at some point. We had it last year kind of with Cooper and Posa just being – like, part of that was just they were really talented players. But I think that they also had, like, you had things click into place when those two guys came on the field and suddenly everything seemed to come together. It's like there's some level of luck where things just, like, kind of come together where a player makes a play that you're not expecting or whatever. And I think that they are due for some of that. I'm not saying that they need to lean on that and hope that that's what happens, but I can understand why you end up throwing up your arms a little bit and chasing after whatever you can to make things better.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay. Number four, sorry, I lost my place here. Let's talk about the quarterback. Will Colton Joseph's sub 60% completion percentage only get worse in the Big Ten? I'll go first on this one. So his completion percentage last year at Old Dominion was 59.7%. The year before that, it was 59.6 or something like that. It is a concern when you're playing at Old Dominion. One of the things that we've talked about, Justin, on the show, and you brought this up several months ago, was that he had to launch the ball downfield a lot. And theoretically, with Grimes' offense, this will improve. I actually don't think he's going to have a better completion percentage because, I mean, completion percentage is one of those things where, like, yes, the offense matters and yes, what we do, but the defenses he's going to face are far superior. I think Colton Joseph's going to have a good year. I think you can still have a good year and not have a above 60% completion percentage because his legs are his strength. He's going to move the ball. That's going to force defenses to play him differently. I think he will complete shorter passes. He will be able to launch the ball downfield. I don't want to set the expectation for myself that he's going to have a 65 or 70% completion percentage because I just don't think it's going to happen. He was sub 60 at Old Dominion. Think he's going to be good. Think we have a nice upside with him. But I think completion percentage will be a stat, Justin, that we look back at and say, man, it's unfortunate. He's just not quite as accurate as maybe we want him to be, but that doesn't mean he's going to be a bad quarterback. That just means that, to me, is one of those things where his stat line is not going to look great. I'm going to say no on this. I mean, yes, I think it will actually get worse a little bit, but he's still going to be okay.
Yeah, I'm buying big time that this is going to actually improve. I think the shorter throws will make a difference. I think that you could also look to the fact that he was basically carrying that team for the bulk of the season. So I think that there's going to be a lot more situations where he's going to have more help around him than what he's had. I honestly think that he gets into the close to the mid 60s in terms of what we see here. I do think the defenses are better, but I also think he's got more talent around him. And I do think that a lot of the throws are going to be easier throws. Somebody threw a chart up on the Discord that showed basically based off of completion percentage, as well as like perceived aggressiveness and depth of target. And there was this chart showing as like a slanted one, and like on the bottom right was like the most conservative, bottom left was like you're just bad at both, kind of like you're aggressive and your production is bad. And then the upper right was like the most aggressive and the deepest targeting. And Colton Joseph was like out here like a mile away from every other quarterback that was on the chart. And I'm like, yeah, this says it all here. Like, he was super aggressive with what was expected and also was like kind of his depth of target was off there. And that, like, it followed like the aggressiveness followed with the execution, so to speak. So I expect him, if he comes back and regresses towards the middle of that graph, for that to come up a little bit. I don't know how much. He's not going to be a 70% guy, but I do think that he can get into the mid-60s here if his depth of target drops off, you know, 2, even 3 yards, and suddenly he's throwing like 9 yards on a target. I think that makes a significant difference in terms of his accuracy. I also think that he's got a couple of guys to lean on that are going to be kind of, you know, a safety net that maybe he didn't have when he was at Old Dominion.
Yeah, you're certainly the talent around him is better, but the defenses will be better as well. Like the defensive backs that he faces are going to be far improved.
I'm feeling a bet here between Rajiv and I at some point. We're going to figure something out on this. We'll go ahead.
No way, because I'm not betting that he's going to have a crappy completion percentage. I just feel like I could see him having a 60% completion percentage and us still being okay with him because of how much he uses his legs and how dynamic he is. But I do think like this is you're right. Okay. Average depth of target is going to go down. Obviously this is why I put this on the list. It's a good question because yes, like it should improve, but also will it improve? Is it all because of the depth of target? Is it all because he was carrying the team? He put so much on his back, but also he's still playing quarterback for Wisconsin in the Big Ten. He's going to face really good defenses. And how's that third down completion percentage going to look next year? And I don't know. We'll see, right? Like, it's a big question, but I think it's something that we're going to watch for early on is, do we consider Colton Joseph to be an accurate quarterback? And if we do, then things will look really good.
I think this is a question we might have to deep dive into a little bit more too, to see how many defenses he's going to face that are considered above average pass defenses.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. Okay. Number five, is Luke Fickell actually the CEO type head coach Wisconsin thought they hired? I thought this was interesting because, I mean, you have like nowadays you really do kind of have this whole CEO thing with NIL and fundraising and recruiting and all these aspects of it. Do you feel like Luke Fickell has kind of achieving that CEO type coach that they hired? Was that their plan? Do you feel like they like that? Like, how do you think that all is playing out?
I think he is what I thought he was going to be when he came in. What I wasn't expecting was the coordinators or some of the coaching hires to not be as good as we were hoping for. And I think that ultimately, if you're going to be a CEO head coach, you have got to be an exceptional hire. And if you don't do that, it's going to show, because your hands are not necessarily on the day-to-day operations as closely as some other coaches are. And he really seems to struggle with finding guys that he fully trusts in. Now, I do think he's made some good hires. I think we would agree that Mateos is a good one. I still have faith, you know, in Grimes being a solid, you know, offensive coordinator with some upside, because we've seen what his ceiling is, and it can be exceptional when he really gets things rolling. I think people are a little too down on him to a degree. I think every offensive coordinator, even the best ones, have down years. So we'll see what happens there. But honestly, I'm really curious to see how this goes. But I think he's a lot of what we expected. I think in some areas I expected him to be a little sharper at evaluating things, maybe, than what we've seen. But it does seem like it eventually kind of gets into his head. Like, we've seen coaches that will bang their head against the wall for five straight years with the same exact issue. And it's like, how are you not seeing this? And Fickell, at least, seems to see the field.
Yeah, I actually think that he is becoming this. He is that CEO coach now. And because it's taken him a few years to figure out how things are going to work here, I commend the university for giving him a continued chance, even though I was one for calling for him to lose his job. But I think that they doubled down, they bought in, and, you know, obviously the department is changing now with the people at the top, the athletic director search. But either way, I do think they wanted a CEO type coach. I think they've got that. I think he is sort of coming into his own now. Along with that, that kind of goes into what you were talking about, Jeff Grimes. Number six, Justin, will Wisconsin finally have an identity, or will it be year four of searching for one? So this has been obviously the whole Longo experiment and everything. And are we a running team? Are we not? Then Grimes came in last year. The offensive line wasn't there. We never really saw the Grimes system. You've touched on this a lot. Do you feel like we're going to be able to sit here at the end of the season and say, yeah, we know what Wisconsin's identity is, and mainly offensively? Let's kind of focus offensively here. Or are you still kind of thinking we're not really sure what we're going to get?
Well, I think identity is one of those, it's kind of a buzzword that people throw out there to a degree. And really what it comes down to a lot of the times with identity is, do you have the offensive line to function offensively the way you want to? And when teams don't have an identity, more times than not, it's because the offensive line stinks. They're incapable of being able to execute what allows them to be effective as an offense. Even if you don't have great skill talent, typically if the offensive line is good, you get away with, you know, being able to make plays. It just might not be able to attack downfield and be very aggressive. I view this as I expect the offensive line to be significantly better. I thought last year it was well below average, at least in my opinion. And I expect it to be solid at a minimum this year. I do think that by season's end, we're going to start looking at it and saying this group is downright good. But if that's the case, I expect us to be able to consistently run the football. And if that's the case, then I expect us to have at least a reasonable play action game, if not some effective passing game. But I'm not necessarily sure how explosive it will be, but I do expect them to be able to execute the passing game far better than we've seen in the last few years.
Tyler says identity is tied to health, in my opinion. If your key guys are hurt, hard to implement what you want to do. I think ultimately what I want to see this year, and why I put this question up here, is a proper plan from Jeff Grimes that can be executed. And if it's a heavy quarterback run game, I think that's an element that has to be included. But you've got to have a bread and butter. And coming into Jeff Grimes, like when he came in, and you talked a lot about him from the Kansas days, and you watched a lot of tape on him, you know, you kind of saw a guy that mesh, that short passing played a really big part in it, that spreading the field properly, and that was his bread and butter of some short passes, but also running the ball. He ran the wide zone running game. Like, we didn't really see what Jeff Grimes's typical systems are. And as you said, pointed out correctly, it was because of the O-line health. I just want to see our bread and butter. I want to know that we have that. Now, for years, that was the power running game. You know, we had the guys up front. We had the running backs. We had the blocking scheme. We had the best guys to block. And we were going to run it down your throat. And in the fourth quarter, we were going to bury teams. And we did that for years under Barry Alvarez, Paul Chris, Brett Bielema, all of it. I don't know what that is now. I don't know what that bread and butter is. I do think we're going to see that. I do think we're going to see typical more of that typical wide zone kind of scheme from Grimes. But, and I think we have the players for it. I hope we do. I think that the low line, as you said, will be better. But we need to see one, because if we're continuing to not know what Wisconsin's bread and butter is, which is what I think of identity, that's what I think of, is what's our bread and butter? What are we going to rely on when adversity hits? What can we do well? And I hope to see that from Grimes this year, man, because if we don't, we're not going to probably see Grimes again.
Yeah, what I'll say on this is, from that standpoint, I expect us to run the football. I don't know what that means in terms of how effective that's going to be, but I do think it's going to, like, we're going to see a better offense than we saw last year. No matter what, that's going to be it can't be worse. That's one of the worst offensive showings that there's been in, like, the last 80 years of college football.
I mean, it can be worse. It can.
Yeah, we could basically have like Ebola virus go through the offense. Like, that's really the only thing that potentially could make them struggle more than they did last year. I think, like, at a minimum, they get back into like the low 20s for scoring offense, which means we'll have an idea of what they're trying to do. The question is, can you get into that upper 20s? And start to look like we now know what you actually are going to do. With this schedule, I just think that they should be effective for the most part. And that, I think, is really what I want to see, is like, you guys should be able to run the football. It doesn't mean you'll be able to just dominate on the ground, but you should be able to consistently run the football to the tune of, you know, 150, 170 yards. It might not be the old days where we were getting 230 on teams, but I think we should get back into that realm. And if we can do that, that means the short passing game should be there for you, and you should have some ability to do some things through the air where, you know, the running game kind of keeps defenses honest a little bit.
Do you expect a lot of QB design runs from Grimes this season?
I know when I watched Kansas, it was a big focal point with what they had. I'm curious to see if – I think a lot of it will come down to how much they like Colton as a passer. Like, you ultimately start doing some of those things with the run game because you don't feel as confident in your QB's ability to dice up a defense. I think he's going to have some designed runs, but a lot of it will come down to how effective and how consistent is he at throwing the football. Because ultimately you don't want to put him in harm's way if you don't have to.
Yep. Completion percentage, back to that. Like, if that number's looking good, he might not need to run as much, but he obviously is talented in this regard. He's very skilled. He's got great attributes to be a running quarterback, and we'll see what that looks like next year. Okay, some bigger program stuff now. Number 7, is this program mentally, and this program means coaches, players, everything, the whole persona of the culture, is it mentally tough enough to win when adversity hits? As I said, we're going to be in closer games this year, right? Close games will define, in my opinion, and I will say this a lot throughout the summer, close games will define Wisconsin's Badgers football season. Anywhere from 5 wins to 9 wins, it's going to be our ability to win games when it matters, to play defense when it matters. Is this team mentally tough enough? For me, I think it actually is, because of guys like Posa and Catalano. And I think they are going to bring so much mental fortitude to that defense. And when the defense is strong, I think that entire team culture can rally around that. And I think we have a player in Colton Joseph, whether or not he's going to be the most amazing passer. He's a football player. He's a fighter. He's a battler. And I think that's what you need. And I think with year four of Fickell, by allowing him to stay, by rallying around him and saying he's our coach next year, while we were upset about it at the time, I think in the end it pays dividends because the team now believes that we are together as one. I think that the way we ended the season last year was obviously very strong. So I do think because of those big wins against Washington and Illinois, you're going to see a more mentally tough team. If you look at the Iowa game last year, that's the definition of not mentally tough. We were there. That was a disaster. That was a 37-0 game. And that was where the mentality just dropped out. I would like to believe that with that adversity hits again this year, we're not going to fall into the tank. We're not going to see that mental lapse like we did against Iowa because of the way the season ended. This could be wishful thinking, but I like to believe that we're going to be a much, much more mentally tough team this season.
Well, I mean, the Iowa game can be chalked up effectively to the three turnovers in a row. I don't think we have a quarterback that's going to turn the ball over three consecutive drives like we did.
But if that happens, we can't play like shit the rest of the game either.
Correct. I agree with that. But I think that is a factor in part of this is the mental fortitude is you have a turnover, not going out there and doing something dumb again and turning the ball over and giving the defense something to build off of and potentially – like we cratered – that's probably the game we cratered the most last year in terms of like players not believing in themselves. And it showed in the final score. That game is like legitimately, if you looked at it from a talent standpoint, that game was a lot closer than it played out on the field. It was just the way that the game started was so self-destructive that Wisconsin just caved and gave in. And they didn't fight the rest of the way down that game. And that was ultimately what led to it being such a poor game. But the three turnovers were a huge factor in that. And that's where this team has got to find an ability to kind of keep their head and be like, all right, we made a mistake. We blew it on one play. It happens. We got to move forward. And I think I think Joseph has a swagger to him that I like at quarterback that I think will help this team on the offensive side. I believe in the defensive side of the ball. I trust in Posa and Catalano being those guys that carry that swagger on the defensive side. We need somebody on the offensive side to do it. And I think he's one of them. I think Haywood's one of those guys who kind of is out there and is kind of just has a mean streak to him. And we'll go out there and fight. And I think we'll see some of these other spots to do it. But I think you have some guys that you believe in. Coverley's another one of those guys on the offensive side that where you're like, yeah, he's not afraid to go out there and butt heads with the other team and show that he wants it. And you need some of that. There needs to be some of that, you know, mean streak and just guys who aren't afraid to mix it up. On the offensive side of the ball, we got it last year on the defensive side. Now this offensive side needs to take a big step in that regard.
Yeah. Leadership. It comes down to leadership here. And, you know, like I think Sebastian Cheeks, by the way, is another guy defensively that can do that.
Yeah.
But listen, it's going to happen. We're going to have a game where we turn the ball over early a couple times. We're going to have a game where, you know, we're playing early and we give up a long 75-yard touchdown. Somebody falls over. Like it's going to happen, but are we good enough to come back from that or are we going to fold? And I think that's obviously going, again, this is one of the tough questions that this team has to answer when this season starts. And I would like to think this is going to happen. And literally from the moment that Chris McIntosh said, we're keeping Fickell, he's going to be here next year. That point forward, we've seen a turn from a culture perspective. I'd like to see that go, you know, continuing. We have all this positivity from a recruiting perspective, but if we don't see it on the field and we don't show mentally tough on the field, this whole program will fall apart. And it is probably the biggest question that I have going into the season is, are we going to be a team that folds or are we going to be a team that fights?
I will say, based off things you've told me and some of the others that we've heard from, it feels like collectively the energy around the staff and how comfortable they feel with their roster is significantly higher than where it's been in the last few years.
That is for sure, which leads me into my next question. Will Wisconsin's increased investment actually show up on Saturdays? Yeah, it is. Absolutely. This is the best roster that Luke Fickell has had. That's certainly, you know, from our perspective as fans looking at this and looking at the talent level, but also from people inside the program that I've spoken with, like that there is a lot of confidence as it relates to this. And I think that certainly the Joseph investment, the investment in the cornerback room alone, the offensive line, you know, getting guys like Wilkins, getting other, it's, I think we are going to see that show up. And what that simply means is, are we going to have the talent to compete with the people against our, on our schedule? We didn't last year. That's for sure. We didn't have the mental fortitude. We didn't have the talent. This year, we're going to have the talent. Do we have the mental toughness? Which is why that's still a huge question. But I do think it shows up. I think that when we're lining up against the teams, that again, those 50-50 games, they're going to be close. There's going to be difficulties. But I do think the investment's going to show up. And that's because this roster is as good as it's been, for sure.
Yeah, I think ultimately that's the biggest difference to me. Like I brought up earlier, I don't see any holes on this roster. We're ultimately what's going to address what the final record is on this team is, all right, it feels like we balanced this out and we're at a, we've set a stable floor. How many of these pieces, what type of upside do these pieces actually have to find out of how dynamic this team can truly be? Can Colton Joseph go out there and be a true difference maker at quarterback and grow into it? That's a possibility. Like I know people are kind of all over the place. I don't take a ton from the spring because I view it as that's your learning. Like you, now you're getting your true reps in this after just looking at a book and figuring out what's supposed to be going on or walking through things. Now the fall is to get down to business and get ready so that you can execute at a level that allows you to do some things. He has some ability that, quite frankly, maybe two or three other quarterbacks in the Big Ten from a like physical ability talent standpoint actually have. There are very few quarterbacks in this league that have his skill set. The execution level is going to ultimately be what decides the ceiling of this team. If he's able to execute at a really high level, he can start putting himself into some situations where he's the only guy that's capable of making those plays. And I mean that in from the standpoint of Wisconsin and very few other schools in this league that are going to be able to do it, which makes them incredibly difficult to defend. Like if he's going to be on the move and being able to put defenses in a tough spot, it's going to be really tough. Yeah. I think that he gives you a real chance to do some things offensively. And I like the run game. Like I think the running game is going to be either solid to good. And that to me is, can we get back to being able to average 5 yards per carry for our starting backs? I think Sama's going to be 5'1", 5'2", which would be a massive step in the right direction for us. It means he's probably going to break a run here and there. And that I know you and me, like that's one of the things that will be a catalyst to whether or not this season is going to be good is do in those first couple of non-conference games that aren't Notre Dame, do we see guys breaking off 20, 30-yard runs? If that's happening, we'll feel really good about where the rest of the season is going to go. Because if they can run for 250 yards in those games, which I think is in play for both of those games, Wisconsin's going to start to look like, hey, we may be able to legitimately run the football to a pretty good degree this year.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to put pressure on, you know, the first game, but I think part of this is, will that investment show on Saturdays? Will it show up in the first game? I mean, if we get blown out by Notre Dame, does that just automatically, then it goes back to the mentally tough part? Like,
do you think that that's a possibility given where we think the floor of the defense is going to be? Like, I don't know if I could
see
Notre Dame dropping 40 on us with this defense, but I also don't know what if we're going to score more than two touchdowns.
I mean, look, Notre Dame is one of the most loaded teams in the country. They are one of the favorites to win the national title. Like it's going to be a very difficult game, but I think that this is the kind of thing, like this is going to set the tone and we don't have to win this game, but we do need to compete. We're playing in Lambeau. It's kind of a home field, obviously a lot of energy around that game. By the way, Justin and I are going to be there. Let me tell you something, finding hotels in Green Bay. Holy crap. I'm gonna have to sleep on Justin's couch in Fond du Lac. I mean, it's like, it should be a game where we can display that the investment is going to work. But what I'm my fear is that we lose that game badly. Now all of a sudden we're starting in this hole. The mentality comes back to mentality, comes back to that toughness. We have two non-con games after that. Do we look good? Do we get strong again? Like there that game is going to tell us a lot. And I would like to think that yes, the investment's going to show up. We're going to have that talent, especially as you say defensively. We can keep them in check a little bit. I think our defensive secondary and the improvement we've made there, that will be the reason that we're in more of these games against the really good teams. but we'll see.
I would agree.
Moving into recruiting slightly a little bit, Justin, number nine, has Luke Fickell officially locked down the state of Wisconsin? This is coming into Luke Fickell's tenure. He brought up wanting to keep guys here. Couple classes in a row looked really bad. We were losing guys to elsewhere. This has really been the first class where you look up and down the list of top Wisconsin guys, they're almost all coming to Madison. That is a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think that this has been overblown to a degree. I think when I look at the in-state recruiting, like, you have to have guys you actually want. And I think just because somebody is a fringe Power Four player does not necessarily mean that Wisconsin's looking for them. The bigger question would be, how many guys has Wisconsin consistently gone after and missed out on? Now, we can make arguments for some of the top shelf guys, but I don't know how many of the top guys we've looked at and said, you know, we didn't lose out to a program that's in a significantly more successful spot. Excuse me. Gavin Meyer would be one of the ones that you'd look at and probably say, okay, this one stings a little bit because he was a guy that we lost to Minnesota. Anytime we lose somebody to Minnesota, I look at it, I'm like, we're kind of swimming in the same pool right now. We should have the in-state, you know, option here where we get the benefit of the doubt on that. They got to fix that. Roy was another one that you would have thought would have been a guy that we would have liked to have gotten. Other than those two, who really have we lost that they've gone after hard? That didn't go to, like, Notre Dame or Ohio State or Michigan or someone of that ilk, where I think Wisconsin's always going to struggle. Like, you could bust your butt. Like, Paul Chryst was losing guys to those schools. Like, and everyone lauded him for how he recruited in-state. Some of those guys are just going to be really tough when you have teams that are going to be going for national titles. Until Wisconsin puts themselves in that neighborhood and we're like a fringe playoff team or a team that's consistently making it like every other year or every few years, we're going to be struggling to get those guys because some of those guys are going to want to take a shot at winning a national title.
Yeah. But, you know, as you mentioned with Gavin Meyer, losing guys to Minnesota is just unacceptable. You know,
I agree with that.
And I think,
when there's only been a couple of guys, like in the 4 years that he's been here, how many guys has he lost that he legitimately wanted that we didn't get?
Well, legitimately wanted can be a topic because we maybe couldn't get a guy like Brody Schaefer or Lamont Hamilton or Sam Simpson who went to IU. But I just think that, like, had we performed better on the field and had we opened up some of those pipelines more, we could have wanted them. I think we didn't want them because we knew we couldn't get them, perhaps.
Well, did we offer them?
Yeah, that's right. I have to look and see how many we actually offered. I think a lot of these guys
we that did not get like an Ohio State or Notre Dame type offer. We got them, other than, like I said, Gavin Meyer or Roy. Those are the only two guys that we offered that we did not get.
Brody Schaefer, we did offer. Went to Iowa.
Was he the wide receiver?
Wide receiver number two in the class.
We came in very late on him right before he committed to Iowa.
I mean, look, I agree with your overall point that ultimately we've got to want them, but I just think that when you have an above average player in the state, you need to make sure that if you do want them, you got to lock him down. And we definitely, losing Gavin Meyer is pretty much the one thing that you can look at and say, why? Yeah. We're losing him to Minnesota. Yeah. And we don't want to be in battles with Minnesota. We don't want that.
I agree with that.
Like, we want to lock these guys down. Now, then you look at the top 10 players from this year's class, 27, it's like, whoa, they're all coming to Madison. It's because I do think that recruiting has stepped up. I think there is something to it. And there absolutely is a part of where there is.
I just think that it's over. Like I said, I think it's slightly overblown to how.
Maybe, but I think it matters. It ultimately matters to fans. Like, they see these guys that they're the top players in the state. We have one D1 program in the state of Wisconsin. We should be able to get those guys if we want them. You're right. If we want them, I think we would have taken some of the guys in the last couple of years. I'm glad that it's this year. I think this is important, and I'm glad that we're doing much better. Okay, last one. I moved my thing there. Number 10, kind of a big picture. Is rock bottom for Wisconsin football officially in the rear view mirror, Justin?
Yeah, I do think that we're going to move in the right direction this year. Long term, I can't say. We'll see if it's consistently moving in a line in the upward trajectory. I think they get back to winning. I think they get a bowl game this year, and we'll see how far they end up going in the right direction. I think there's a chance, based off this schedule, that if they are a pretty darn good offense. I think the defense will be there. They have a chance to be, if you know, in the playoff discussion heading late into the season. Now, whether or not they get to that level, we'll see what happens. They could lose some games too that end up costing them that opportunity. But I do think that they're, this is laid out. This schedule is about as good as it gets for you to have a chance at making a postseason run if things click. Ultimately, I think I would probably set my line at 7-5. And if things go well, you have a chance to be better than that. But right now, I think that everything is in place for Wisconsin to have a good year.
So I absolutely think, yes, rock bottom is behind us. And I think that rock bottom, that Iowa game that we were at, was pretty much the end of that. Like that third, losing 37-0 against one of your biggest rivals was a disaster. Hearing half of Camp Randall yelling, "Fire Fickell," Camp Randall emptying out, like that, if that's not rock bottom, we are in for a world of hurt. That has to be rock bottom. Yeah. We can't ever be back in a situation where the team basically gives up. The coach and staff looks like they're on their way out. You're staring a horrible season in the face. You're staring down this massive buyout. You're looking at the future thinking, where can this ever go wrong? Are we going to be the bottom basement of the Big Ten now? Like, there's so many things that we saw last year that I think we can never see again. And I do think it is in the rearview mirror. I really do. I think that everything is looking up now. Certainly recruiting. We just talked about on our 10 questions, we just talked about in-state recruiting. We talked about mental fortitude. We talked about culture, the program. All those things are trending up in the right direction. And I think that really does matter.
Yeah, I'll put this out here because Kevin, our buddy Kevin, put this out there saying Fickell still could get fired, a new AD could want his guy. At that point in time, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. What I think ultimately happens there is if Fickell has a good season, it really depends on what a new AD views as good. And is there somebody that they would want outside of Fickell? Like, I think if you're in the 7-5 range, you can make the argument if you're a new AD that maybe we need to go in a right direction or a different direction. If you get to 8-4, I think it's largely unlikely that even if somebody new comes in, that you're going to make a change. Because I think at that point you have to ride this and see, like, all right, is this just that we've reset and now we move up from here? Or is, you know, you have to kind of reevaluate at that point and give it another year. We will find out what's going on in that regard coming up. I'm very curious to see. I think we would probably say within the next month or so, we'll probably hear something moving on the 80, you know, search. I haven't heard any names, which means that it could be somebody in-house that they're thinking that, which we'll see what happens there. But realistically, I think that a lot of it's going to come down to if a new AD comes in, if it's somebody with pedigree, they may have, it's very true. So they may have people that they like for the potential coaching situation. And there's people out there that we've talked about before that people like, but I just think that until we see what's going on in the field, we need to, I'm not going to sit on the Fickell talk at this point until we have something to talk about. There's no reason to sit here and talk about him being swapped out until we see them underperforming on the field this season. I would much rather like to look at this from the standpoint of, hey, everything seems to be going right for once. Like, that would be great to just, I think we're all overdue for seeing this, some good football again this year.
Yeah. And I think even if we have a new AD that wants someone else, I think you're hiring someone with the understanding that the athletic department made a commitment to Luke Fickell last year. And that's been bared out by NIL money, investment into the program. They made a very clear statement, like it or not. It was a clear statement that says, we're going to invest in the program. We need to be better about this. We're going to give him what he needs. And the 27 class shows that he's continuing to build the future of the program. We're happy with the 24 and 25 class, 26. Okay. But ultimately it's going in the right direction. So I think a new AD would have to just sit on it. And let's see what happens. Like, I think we've all agreed, if we have another 5-7 season, that's going to be the end of it, especially with the schedule.
I think that's a given. Like, I think bowl eligibility is the minimum for this year. You have to have, if you're new AD coming in and you just got to 6-6, I think you're going to really have to take a strong look at that and be like, all right, we put more resources into this year. This isn't working. Cause like that can't be your ceiling where like you're getting back where you put a bunch of money into this and you're like, we're still not able to be an above average team. I think ultimately they'll cross that bridge when it comes to it. But I think even Fickell would say that. Like if we just stumble into a 500 record and this is year four, like these are all my guys and we put resources into this, you have to reassess and look back. And he's not a stupid guy. Like people can sit there and talk about these coaches as morons and whatever, you know, they're not dumb. Like they want to be successful too. They're looking at this and they're looking for answers to try and make that happen. And I think that ultimately looking at this, everyone wants this to be a successful season at this point. And I don't want to keep pushing the positivity. I know there are people who are critical of this, but I do think that we need to kind of take a look at it and like, why do we want to be negative until we actually see the season start to play out and have a reason to be pessimistic? Like, let's be optimistic until we see something that tells us we shouldn't be.
Dude, for sure. Like if you want to see us being negative, just go watch every show from last season.
Like, yeah. And that was brutal. Like that is so draining to have to do shows.
It is. And honestly,
when you're as passionate as we are as fans, like these are everyone that's watching this stuff is the hardcore fans.
Yeah.
Like none of us want to see the team do poorly because it is like, it ruins your day. You feel miserable. Like there have been times as Rajiv and I will say, like when you're somebody who has to do a podcast on this stuff, It is brutal when your team is not good because you want to walk away from football and take a break from it and just be like, I don't want to be around this. And when you know you have to do a show on it and you're like, I'm in such a bad headspace, it's really hard. Like it's so
therapy.
Hard to force yourself to be thrown into that and be like, I have to talk about this. And the last thing I want to do is talk about this.
It's therapeutic. It's therapeutic.
It definitely has its upsides.
Bo Dragon, why be negative? Because they have put out hot garbage for 3 years. This is a Bo Dragon take. Fair enough, Bo. Fair enough. I would always choose to be positive because look, we're moving in the right direction. We've got a lot to look forward to. We are 84 days away from the start of the season. Justin, final thoughts before we close the show.
Yeah, there's a lot to be excited about here. I think the staff did an excellent job with this recruiting cycle. Hopefully we have a couple more guys that kind of pop into this. I know somebody had asked about Brody Fannin-Steele and everything that's going on there. If I had to say my gut instinct on this, with him taking the visit to Texas Tech, I just feel like if they couldn't get it wrapped up before that, I did not feel great about our chances. Like if he was going to take the visit back to Tech, that to me was always going to be an unlikely then that he was going to be a Badger because he's already committed to Texas Tech. So if he left here and you had not gotten him to at least to the point where you're like, we're in the lead here, I have to look at it that you didn't do enough. And that's great job by Tech then holding on to him because he's a heck of a recruit. But ultimately, I think it's very unlikely that Wisconsin's going to flip him post a Texas Tech visit.
Well, listen, like Texas Tech may be boycotted by every school in the country by the time so who knows? Who knows what happens? It could actually work in our favor, this whole Brendan
Swordsman. Yeah, and they should stay on. He's absolutely one that they should stay on for the remainder of this because the PR going towards Tech right now is miserable.
Yeah.
And that can wear somebody down over time.
Like, for sure.
Nobody wants to hear that the school that they're committed to is just being dragged through the mud by everybody and the most hated team. I mean, I'm sure there's some kids out there that enjoy the idea of being the heel. But I think a lot of them just don't want to hear people brag on their team constantly.
Yeah, definitely. If you're still watching this, the many of you that are still watching, just hit that like button. Thanks. Thanks for your support of the show. If you're just joining us, rewind, go back. We did 10 tough questions facing Luke Fickell and the entire Wisconsin football program. We also touched on James Roberson, Jack Tabbert, Jack Thielen, and the Brendan Sorsby situation as well. Thanks for joining us. We've got tons of content coming up again the next few weeks. More football preview stuff. Know Your Foe series is going to be starting soon. Continued recruiting talk. Lots of stuff as we lead up to football season under 3 months away. Thanks for joining us. And as always, on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Bucky Report or The Bucky Report Podcast from wherever you get your content. Until next time, on Wisconsin.